Hello, everybody. Welcome to a new episode of Tech Can Save Us podcast brought to you by Literal Humans. As always, I'm your host, Paul David, CEO of Literal Humans, and I'm joined today by Justine Pilewski, co-founder and CEO of Kindred. Today, we're going to talk about reinventing travel through home exchange. Welcome to the pod, Justine.
Thank you so much for having me, Paul. I'm excited to be here.
I think this might be the first podcast where I've actually sort of engaged with the product multiple times, and I'm like a loyal customer. So it's very cool to have you on.
Back at you. It is always fabulous to get the opportunity to chat with a member who's used and loved this thing that we've worked so hard over the past couple of years to bring about. So it is a total pleasure.
Yeah, well done. Well, I'm going to go over a very long introduction for you right here, so hang in there. But for our guests or our listeners, Kindred is a members-only home exchange community that's making travel more affordable and authentic by enabling people to swap homes. Since launching in 2021, Kindred has grown to include over 130,000 homes across more than 100 cities worldwide. By way of introduction, Justine brings her experience from her time at Homebound, where she led customer experience and brand development, and at Opendoor, where she headed their self-tour experience. The company has been featured in major publications like The New York Times, Architectural Digest, and TechCrunch. Justine, we're really excited to have you here, and let's jump in. I want to talk about home swapping with you. Are you ready?
Let's go.
So the concept of home swapping, it's not entirely new, but it is seeing a bit of a renaissance in the kind of post-pandemic world. Would love for you to walk us through, the evolution of home exchange programs over the years, what the unique gap in the market that Kindred has identified and has led to your rapid growth, what that gap is, and just kind of set the scene, the landscape for our audience if you can.
Yeah, absolutely. So as you mentioned, we are not inventing the concept of home swapping. This is something that has been around for decades. And there are really three kind of big eras in home swapping when we look back. First is starting in around the 1950s. That's when the first real kind of international home exchange programs started cropping up. And a lot of the times they were focused on students or teachers doing exchange programs, teachers who had summer vacation off and wanted to go somewhere for a couple months, but it's really expensive to go pay a couple months worth of rent or stay in a hotel for that long. And so there were analog ways, a big phone book that people would mail to each other of finding a great match, on the other side of the world or in a different country, to coordinate their own home exchanges. And that sort of continued for decades as a sort of niche sub-communities that were finding their own ways to engage in home swapping. And then in the 90s, that's kind of started more of the digital era of home swapping, where websites, the dot-com boom was happening, and people said, hey, let's put this on a website. This is a lot easier than mailing phone books or making newspaper listings. And so there were these large listing sites like Home Exchange and others that essentially had this kind of classified ad structure, but online, where people could come list their home and say, hey, I live here, I'm looking to go there, and coordinate and find other people online, which really increased access to home swapping. That said, it was still pretty much the kind of classified ad structure, which could be difficult to find a great match. And there also wasn't a ton of involvement in the actual travel experience. You're sort of, you're on your own, figure it out yourselves. And then I think there was a start of this new era really recently with the pandemic, frankly. There was this moment in time when so many people around the world realized all at once, oh, wow, I can work remotely a little bit more easily than I thought I could. And that greatly increased the flexibility that a lot of folks all around the world had to be able to go take a week or 2 weeks off. People wanted to take advantage of that flexibility. And so it saw this big resurgence in interest around home swapping. And that's really kind of when Kindred came about. I think we're kind of pioneering this, this third wave of home swapping that says, what can we do to create a digital matching experience that makes finding a great match really easy? And how can we layer on technology and services to make the experience really predictable, really safe, really certain, vet people and make sure that it is a really certain experience so that if people are going to buy a plane ticket to show up on the other side of the world, they have the confidence that they need to kind of move forward with that trip.
Yeah, so much of starting a startup is like keying in on those problems and solving them, you know, for folks. I mean, that talk to us about like product market fit. Obviously, there's lots of challenges that problems face. You mentioned like that trust piece. How did you all sort of navigate that and find these problems and holes or market gaps, I guess, as market failures, and then sort of build your app or your product accordingly?
Yeah, so I'm a really big believer, and this is something I learned in my previous roles at Opendoor, at Homebound. I really think that to find what we call product market fit, you need to stay super focused on what actually delivers real value to the customer. Like, you need to focus on problems first, not on ideas, actually. And I think that's a mistake that I see a lot of founders making. I think out there, we see a lot of like technology in search of a problem, when really it should sort of be the other way around, where you identify a problem and can live and breathe that problem and be agnostic to the solution, but say, I'm going to try and find a way to solve this problem. And that's the best way that you can navigate the idea maze and find product market fit. And so really the problem that my co-founder Taz and I were obsessing about was a very personal one for us, which I think is also, we were not alone in this. We were sitting around saying, I want to travel more. I want to live this kind of a lifestyle where I can act like I have homes all over the world. You know, I'm a city person. I live in San Francisco. I was born and raised here, but I'm also a nature person and I'm also a mountain person. And I'm also a Mexico City person and a London person and a New York person. Those are also within me. And I don't want to just have to live in one place. But my goodness, how do I pull that off financially? You know, we were looking at how expensive it is to stay even more just than a few nights in a short-term rental or a hotel. It's like double or triple my monthly rent to stay a week somewhere. And that just was untenable. You know, even if you can afford it, you cringe when paying it. And so that felt like it wasn't a great solution. And so we gave ourselves this design question that was, how can we make it possible to live this much more travel-rich, more geographically flexible lifestyle and really fundamentally change the cost structure to make it radically more accessible to people? We really believed that there was something left on the table in the travel industry. And it wasn't just that it was so darn expensive. That was a really big part of it. But I think we also felt that this move toward the professionalization of short-term rentals also kind of left a lot to be desired in terms of that core travel experience. You know, we wanted to be able to really feel like we lived somewhere in a comfortable home. We wanted to be able to experience the empathy and the connection that comes from building a relationship with someone in the culture and city that you want to go experience. And we wanted to feel like we were part of an international community and had friends everywhere. And so I think we started feeling these problems, these opportunities in the travel space, and said to ourselves, I don't know what the answer is, but if we can design a way to make travel more affordable, to make it far more human again, and lastly, to make sure that it's a model that's really responsible for our cities, which is also something that's very important to me. I think there's a growing problem with housing crises in high demand, high cost cities where we don't have enough housing units to rely on this short-term rental economy to serve all of travel demand because we can't afford to take more primary residences off the market. So we said, is there a way to make travel more affordable, more human, and more responsible for our cities? And if we can figure that out, that will be worth building. And we experimented with a bunch of different ideas and really just kind of tried to stay close to that problem statement and to kind of customer feedback. And that's what led us to this idea of, what if instead of spending a bunch of money to rent a place when we travel, we could exist within a global community of people who have shared values, all kind of want to travel, and we can help each other out. And by coordinating, unlock really unprecedented value to this new kind of travel lifestyle by simply staying in each other's houses instead of having to, you know, break the bank elsewhere. And that led us to home swapping. And the next step was, let's go talk to all of our friends about this and say, have you done this? Why have you not? What are all the things that you're scared about? And those interviews were really helpful for helping us understand how would we need to design this customer experience to remove all the blockers, the hesitations, the things that people would be scared about. What would keep this experience from working? And we heard a lot of things like, I'd be nervous about somebody canceling on me last minute, or I just feel a little weird if somebody sleeping in my sheets, or, you know, it might just be me, but I always worry that someone's going to use my dish sponge on the floor. And it turns out like it's not just you. And a lot of people have those little anxieties. And we said, hey, we can design for this. So let's do things like create a trip protection program. Let's offer 24/7 concierge support so that if you get locked out at 2 a.m., there's somebody who can have your back. Let's give you a host kit that has clean sheets and a new fresh sponge so that you don't have to use your own sheets when you host. And just kind of one by one by one, tried to see if we could design around the hesitations or the blockers to make this experience work for people, to really reach that potential that we believed that it had.
Yeah, I mean, I think you've really nailed it, because I don't think there's many products that I've like evangelized as much as Kindred. Like, I'm always telling my buddies to kind of get on the platform and like, don't worry, they send you sponges and sheets and towels and things like that. So it's really clear that you've listened to, you know, sort of these customer experience concerns and integrated into your product, which I'd love to get into and just like hear a bit more, you know, about the product development, the product rollout, how you've incorporated these pieces. You've got your kind of stay up, you know, 5 nights before you host sort of offering, and then that's part of your model. We'd just love for you to explain to our listeners like exactly how the home swapping process works on Kindred.
Yeah, sure. So Kindred is a give to get ecosystem. It's a members only community where people apply with their actual real primary residence. So over 90% of our homes are people's sole primary residence that's not, you know, cross-listed on other platforms. So you apply with your own home, and then folks can either do reciprocal simultaneous home swap. So like I stay in your home while you stay in mine at the same time, or book travel with a give a night to get a night ecosystem. So by hosting somebody from the Kindred community who I approve of in my home while I'm out, I can bank those nights and use them later on to stay at any other Kindred member's home anywhere else in the world at a later time. And so it's this sort of like karmic economy where those you have to contribute in order to be able to use it. Those who give more are actually the people who get more. There is no way to buy credits or nights on Kindred. You can't sell credits or nights on Kindred. You actually have to contribute supply somehow. Generally, it's by hosting. We also have a program where people refer a friend who gets accepted. We consider that adding supply as well. And so we reward that with 2 credits, 2 nights on the platform. 1 night hosted is 1 night that you can stay at somebody else's house, regardless of the size of your home. We didn't want to get people into this mindset of saying, my home is 2,000 square feet and yours is only 1,600 square feet. So mine should be worth this many points. Yours should be that many points. And really, we're trying to create this experience where people meet each other as humans. They build out really rich household profiles, can create videos and introduce themselves, introduce their cat or dog. You might see my dog wandering around somewhere. There she is. And share a little bit about themselves. What's their career? You know, here's my LinkedIn or social media links. How do I identify myself? What are different clubs or groups that I consider myself a part of, or hobbies? And that really enables people to find what they have in common and turns them from feeling like this anonymous person to this friend who you just hadn't had the chance to meet yet. And so the typical process for requesting a home is you connect with the other member, and the majority of members will actually hop on a video chat or be chatting back and forth in the app before confirming a stay, to really kind of feel each other out and make sure that they feel comfortable with this. So as you mentioned, we have this program where we gift new members 5 nights. That when they are accepted, and they do need to be vetted before we give them these 5 nights, but when they're accepted, they can essentially get the gift of staying in another Kindred member's home before they themselves have to host in order to keep using the product. And the reason why we do that is because this is a really new behavior for the vast majority of our members. The vast majority of people have never done anything like this before. And it's way scarier to let someone stay in your home than to stay in somebody else's home. So we wanted to create a way for people to dip their toe into the experience. And we think of it sort of like the home sharing equivalent of like paying for the coffee of the person in line behind you. You know, like there is something psychologically when you get that gift first, when somebody has been generous with you and has opened their home to you and you get that experience, you walk around and say, wow, like I had this whole trip possible because Paul was nice enough to trust me in his space. Like, that is so amazing. And there is nothing more effective in encouraging people to host than having them say, I want to turn around and pay it forward to the next person. And so we have a really, really high reuse rate of people who use those first five nights and then end up hosting themselves and continuing to use Kindred. And we think that generosity is a cycle. It starts a domino effect of generosity and that we as a platform need to be the ones to kind of start that chain reaction of generosity and trust that when people are on the receiving end of that, they'll then be interested and excited to turn around and pay it forward to the next person.
That's great. Well, I mean, paying it forward is a great kind of accelerant of your growth strategy, which we're going to jump into now. And, you know, we're a growth strategy agency and, you know, go-to-market partner for a lot of tech companies. So we'd be remiss if we didn't ask you about this. A couple questions. You've managed to build, a network of over 130,000 homes in just a few years. And how many members do you have currently right now?
Probably close to double that. On average, we have around 1.7, 1.8 members per household. And okay. So we have, 130-ish households.
Nice. Well, so we'd love to understand about the role that technology has played in your growth strategy. Yeah. So, how are you leveraging, digital tools and AI to kind of scale your vetting process and build trust in the community? Talk to us about the market segments, that have been most responsive to your platform. Just very curious to dig into that growth strategy.
Yeah, absolutely. So referrals have been really impactful for us, especially in the early days when there's a gnarly cold start problem to this marketplace. Before you have enough homes, it's really hard to use because you have a low match rate. And we relied a lot on members loving Kindred and inviting their friends. And so certainly everybody being on their smartphone, we built, a mobile app instead of just a web experience. And that was actually helpful because so many people are texting when they're doing travel planning with their friends and texting each other, looking, sharing things on Instagram. And so being able to meet people where they were when they were doing their kind of travel, wanderlust exploration and brainstorming, I think really helped to grease the wheels of the sharing flywheel. So making it easy for people to text their friends to invite them to Kindred or having a presence on social media, because that's where a lot of people were daydreaming about travel, actually. They were getting on TikTok, they were getting on Instagram. So the Instagram kind of ecosystem actually became really powerful for us. It was sort of a happy accident. This is a kind of funny story. Like Taz and I started Kindred with no engineering support. We stitched together the no-code tools that we had at the time. And this is pre, ChatGPT and everything. We could have done so much more now, but we couldn't build even just like a basic listing site. And so we used a private Instagram as a sort of scrappy listing site where we said, we're just going to post, each post is one home and we're going to add stories to tell people about availability and try and kind of connect people that way because we didn't have the engineering support to do it in a different way. And we ended up finding out, wow, that was actually really effective because we could meet people when they were daydreaming about travel, standing in line at the DMV, browsing their Instagram feed or wherever, instead of having to train people to come to Kindred's website in order to engage with it. So Instagram actually was a big unlock for us. And what sort of started as a bug became a feature. So that was I think one way in which we've been able to kind of lean on the tech ecosystem to scale. Certainly we've been able to use a lot of digital tools and AI to help our vetting process. So we've got a lot of home photos to review. We need to be able to do things like, check out when there's an AI generated photo or when somebody's pulling a photo from online that's not theirs and kind of do fraud prevention. In terms of markets and user segments that you asked about, I think our initial focus was that this is going to be a great platform for remote working millennials who don't have kids yet, but are interested in traveling. They probably don't have pets so that they have more flexibility. And that was what we thought our core segment would be. That segment does exist on Kindred and loves Kindred, but we've been blown away at kind of discovering other segments that have really found a tremendous use for Kindred's product in ways that we did not anticipate. So I mentioned we thought people with kids wouldn't be able to use Kindred that much. We were totally wrong. Turns out a lot of people with kids simply aren't traveling as much because it's really hard to pull off. They have to get two, three, four bedrooms. That's really expensive. They have to schlep all their stuff. They want to travel. They want to give their kids this education of bringing them to a new place and having those family memories. And when we can actually match up families with other families who have similar aged kids, that's an amazing home swap, because not only do those people often want to travel at around the same times of year, like turns out a lot of families with kids want to travel during summer vacation or like winter holidays or whatever, so their timelines match up, but their homes match each other's needs. If you have an infant, it is amazing to go stay in a home that's already baby-proofed and already has a high chair and already has a crib and has the blackout curtains and, you know, all these little things that make it a smoother experience. So families are our fastest growing segment, which was a surprise to us and so exciting to see, especially because our remote working childless millennials end up aging into the families with young children, you know, over time as a segment. The other segment that we kind of stumbled into is pet owners. Turns out a lot of people with cats are already paying cat sitters to come into their home and feed their cat and try and keep their cat company, which adds to the cost of their travel. When they have to take a trip, they also need to account for, okay, I need to pay this cat sitter. And instead of paying a cat sitter, what if you could swap homes with somebody else who loves cats, who has a cat themselves, who's super comfortable with cats, and who is psyched about the idea of having a home base in, you know, Brooklyn, New York, that comes with an amazing cat that they can hang out with. And not only are you not paying a cat sitter, by having this kindred member stay in your place while you're out, you're earning your next trip to Paris. And so that really made sense for cat owners. Dog owners, I'm a dog owner. I find it really hard to find dog-friendly travel accommodations. It's funny, cat owners want to leave their cats, dog owners want to bring their dogs on the trips. So dog owners have been able to kind of work together and say, you have a dog-friendly house, I have a dog-friendly house, like, let's solve each other's problems here and just stay at each other's places.
Yeah, so much of what you said just resonated. I mean, me and my partner, we're still the childless millennial remote workers, but we've definitely, we have a, you know, a sizable flat that has like two baths, two bedrooms. We've had a lot of families like come and stay at our flat, and they're just like, oh, we're so grateful to have, you know, a flat big enough in London to stay that's like near the park and stuff like that. There's like some, you know, children's play equipment just outside, and they've really enjoyed it. We've stayed in a couple places. I stayed in Amsterdam with, you know, someone who had a cat, so I took care of their cat. We just got a cat, so we're looking forward to, you know, being a bit freer and able to travel. We can leave our cat at home and you know that he's well taken care of and stuff like that. So it's really interesting to see all these travel challenges being unlocked and you know, taken care of through using the platform. Really cool.
Totally. Yeah, it's fascinating. We're realizing that this model can serve so many different needs of different segments as long as you have the kind of critical mass of that segment. So like if you have enough, you know, families with kid-friendly homes, then suddenly this becomes an amazing experience for families with kid-friendly homes. But you sort of need to get to that volume first for it to really work, which is one of the biggest challenges in scaling any marketplace. And for us, you know, we will constantly forever have this tension of it's really important for us to scale because then match rates go up. You know, we all are able to find a great home easily on Kindred, but we also need to really protect with everything we've got, protect trust and protect the quality of the customer experience. And so we can't grow too fast to the point where we're not able to deliver a really excellent experience. And every day, like those are the trade-offs that we're thinking about. Growth and experience. How can we make sure that we're finding the right balance and not growing at the expense of experience quality?
Yeah, I like the way you phrase it, like the gnarly sort of cold start problem and like how it's like, you know, multi-sided, the sort of cost of not scaling, but also the risk of you know, the other side of it. So that's really interesting and not a challenge I think a lot of other tech companies and just companies in general face, is that, you know, it's a marketplace problem as well, obviously. But really fascinating. Wanted to pivot to you and like your experience and you know, you've had this this background that spans cognitive neuroscience at Brown University and roles in customer experience and brand development. And, you know, I want to share with our audience, or I want you to share with our audience, you know, the personal experiences, professional experiences that you brought to Kindred that kind of helped you shape the organization, Open Door, Homebound, and just lessons that you've learned from previous professional and personal experiences that helped you shape Kindred.
Yeah, it's funny because I have a lot of experiences both in my education and my prior professional experience that don't totally like make sense together. It's not super linear. It's not like I've always been, you know, a science person, or I'm sort of a science person and an art person and an ops person, but also a design person. And I actually think that in itself has been a big theme and learning for me. You know, growing up, I would write poetry and I loved drawing. And I also was fascinated by neuroscience and got a degree in, you know, cognitive neuroscience. And I think I felt really freed sometime in college when I sort of moved beyond the like, what am I? Like, I need to choose a lane. And instead just kind of embraced like my education, my mind, my thinking will be richer, will be more three-dimensional if I am allow myself to be super multi-dimensional. You know, as Walt Whitman said, you contain multitudes. And, you know, maybe that's a superpower. And so I think for me, having forays, you know, leading brand or leading operations, like, has actually been really helpful in leading to this moment where I'm able to be a sort of jack of all trades or Jill of all trades, where I can be dangerous in a lot of different functions. And that's really helpful as a founder and as a business leader, because, you know, especially in the early days of a startup, you need to do all of these different jobs that you have no business doing and you've never done before. And being able to not only have some exposure to different ways of thinking, but having the confidence of saying, I know I can learn that, you know, even though I've never done it before, because I have seen myself be, you know, move in lots of different directions before, and, you know, nothing stopped me so far. So I believe I will be able to do it. I think that it's also related to, I think there are some companies that were founded with really strong kind of tech or engineering DNA, but don't have great experience design, you know, or brand or design DNA. And then there's the reverse. And I actually think what makes really great customer experiences, really great products, are ones where we think about that whole customer experience across ops and technology, across engineering infrastructure and the design touches. And you need to be able to work with teams of people who are really different from each other and have that holistic view of what should this experience that's taking place partially online, partially offline, like, what does this need to look like? And how can we reach excellence in all these different domains that require different talent and kind of different skill sets? So I think that the breadth in my background has actually been helpful and is something that I didn't quite realize would end up being something of an advantage. I think like some of my bigger lessons from prior kind of company building at Open Door, at Homebound, you know, I mentioned the first one before, which is just stay really close to actual customer value, you know, and be really honest with yourself. Like, is this helping somebody's life in a meaningful way? If not, you know, you got to keep working at it and find something else. And then I think another is just having the courage to design an experience that is maybe harder to pull off, but is better and delivers more value to the customer. For Kindred, as an example, like, we take on the burden of coordinating professional cleaning before and after each stay. This is happening globally. That's a ton of ops effort. That is hard. It would be much easier for us as a business to say, you guys just sort out cleaning. But when we were really honest with ourselves, we, in our customer interviews, we realized it is really important for this experience, for people to not have to scrub their own toilet before they leave on their trip, you know, to host, for people who are showing up after a 12-hour flight to their home swap, for them to know that that home is going to be clean, the sheets are going to be washed and ready for them. And really importantly, when you're hosting someone, that moment when you get back home and you open the door and you walk in and you're like, is my home going to be okay? That is a critical moment that we knew we needed to nail every single time. Like, we need people to walk in and say, wow, this is cleaner than when I left it. And so that meant, shoot, we think we actually do need to take on all of this difficult work of owning and providing some quality control around that cleaning experience, even though it's hard, even though it costs a lot of money, even though it's a total pain in the butt. You know, if we stay close to like what is the actual best experience that we can deliver, that's the answer.
Yeah, I love that. I was doing kind of a tour of San Francisco earlier the year. I try to start my year out, you know, going to Silicon Valley and just talking to founders and getting their sense of what the year is going to look like in terms of growth. And one of the statements that, you know, I recall that stuck out to me the most was, I'm gonna butcher it, but people loving your product is the ultimate moat. Right? Like the moat around you. And just like no one else can beat that. If people just are absolutely in love with your product and the experience they get from it, that's your moat. That's your protection. That's your shield against, you know, competitors or market valuation, you know, market, you know, shifts and things like that. And that's kind of what you're describing, is like staying close to that actual customer value, creating that moat of protection. I just love it. I love that you keyed in on that critical moment, because you can feel that when you were saying that, I could feel that in my chest of like opening the door and like, is everything okay? You know, and I think it's great that you focus on that. So
totally. Yeah. We want to nail that moment. Cleaning is an important part of that moment. And then the other important part is actually having some gesture of gratitude left from the guest who had stayed in your home. That is really important for nailing that moment. You need to walk in, see that it's clean and your house is wonderful, and ideally see a handwritten thank you note. That makes all of the difference. And that's another thing that was like hard to pull off, but we realized in early testing when some of our members just started organically kind of doing that, leaving a, you know, a bottle of wine or flowers, writing a handwritten note, and just how different that made the experience feel. We realized, whoa, we need to design for this. And so that's actually part of our like guest essentials kit that we send out for each trip. It includes like a blank thank you note with a pen so that every guest has like no excuse to not write a handwritten thank you note to their host. And we're thinking right now about, is there a way for us to evolve this? Do we give people a guest book? Is there a digital version? Do we give them a little mini whiteboard? You know, things like that. But we're holding ourselves to this design principle of like, we need that moment. We need the moment of you to come in and have this anxiety release of seeing that not only is your home in great shape, but that there is somebody out there who is so grateful to you for opening your home to them. And that gives you almost like a generosity high, like it feels good. And so we want to make sure that we design for that.
Yeah, I have to say that Kindred made me a better person in that respect, because I, at first, you know, I stayed at a few Kindred and I was like, I'm not going to write a note. Like, I don't do this in Airbnbs or hotels. Like, and then I think I got a note from your team and they were like, hey, Paul, like part of our community, like we leave thank you notes.
That's
like you
so should,
you
funny.
Know. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then I was like, oh man, I've now been shamed into leaving it. So now I always leave a note and I make sure I get a gift. And it's just, you know, yeah, I should be doing that anyway, you know? So I appreciated that. It was like, at first I was like, I'm not going to leave. But then I was like, no. Like, people are doing it for me. I'm part of this community. So, you know, I have to thank you and your team for that. Maybe it was Itzel, my concierge. I forget who it was.
Itzel rules. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. She's awesome. And then what was the other thing I was going to mention? Oh, one time I came back and I have this big mug that my partner bought me. It's like friends themed mug, and it was broken. But the person left a note and they were like, I'm so sorry, I broke it. They got like super glue, reconstructed the mug, and then bought me a new mug. So now I have two of my favorite mug because a Kindred guest like rebuilt it and bought me another one. I just thought that was a great sort of community story from Kindred to share. So,
oh, I love that. Yeah. People care, you know, and when, like, to your point, a lot of people are walking into this experience with this pattern recognition from short-term rentals or hotels where that feels much more kind of transactional. I'm the customer. Like, I'm not going to take my shoes off, you know, to walk on the carpet. Like, I'm the customer, you know, and part of our challenge and opportunity is to find a way to do kind of cultural on and kind of like shake people and be like, this is a different thing. It needs to feel different. And that's part of the sort of how do we maintain quality as we grow, is being a bit more like interventionist in what are the cultures that are emerging on this community, instead of just letting it, you know, like letting it kind of people come in with pattern recognition, expecting it to be like this other experience they had, and sort of like letting it kind of devolve in that way. I think we've tried to find ways to communicate like, hey, this is different, you know, and here's what makes it different. And here's what how we hope that people conduct themselves. Because really, when people know, so often they're like, oh that makes sense. Yeah. You know, I was thinking that this was like an Airbnb, but that makes sense. Like, thank you.
Yeah. No, that's it's very well done, and I've seen the impact on myself and, you know, others. So I'm grateful for it. Want to move us into the quick fire round. These are just like really quick, first thing that comes to your mind, so that the audience can get to know you on a slightly more personal level. They're kind of fun, quirky questions. If you could found another tech startup, what would it be and why?
I mean, I'm so obsessed with travel now, and it's like all I think about. I think there's so much that would be really fun to build around travel planning. And actually, don't be surprised if this, you know, hits Kindred one day, of just kind of like AI-based, like a travel planner. You know, hey, I want to go on a girls' trip. You know, make an amazing itinerary, help me sell it to them. You know, I think that'll be really fun application for AI.
I think that's a great one. I did the remote year program back in the day, and people were trying to crack that. So many people had different versions of that. And like, hey, I'm trying to plan this trip with my mates. And it's interesting that no one's cracked that social travel thing yet. And maybe you'll totally do it. So good luck. You've got a good platform to start on there. So
yeah.
What tech invention makes you the most excited right now?
Yeah. I mean, gosh, right now, just thinking a lot about AI. And, you know, I know that the quick fire questions, I actually think this is also on my what makes me most concerned. Like there's so much potential for AI to be able to democratize access to services or experiences that were really expensive or inaccessible. I think it'll make it so much easier to build companies. And I think it'll encourage more people to be able to get out there and build a product that they wish the world existed without necessarily needing to raise heaps and heaps of venture capital funding in order to do so. I think that there's this like gap in the market for what are ideas that are not necessarily going to be $10 or $100 billion visions, but still deserve to exist. And right now it's like hard to figure out how to build those companies. And I think actually AI makes me really excited for this category of businesses that totally deserve to exist, that can now kind of be bootstrapped in a way that they wouldn't have been able to kind of get off the ground before.
Yeah, I think that's a great analysis of like the market and what's happening right now. It's really, really interesting time.
Yeah.
I think you answered what was your most concerned, the tech that most concerned you in there as well.
So I mentioned it. I mean, yeah. I'm like less worried about the AI robots taking over the world, but I'm more concerned about people. You know, yeah. I think there are a lot of people who want to do bad things out there. And like the destructive power of a dollar or the destructive power of 1 week of work, you know, has just gotten a lot bigger. And so I'm less actually just like worried about the core technology of AI. And I'm more worried about this technology in the hands of bad people. And so that keeps me up at night.
Yeah, you've cut to the heart of why our podcast is named what it is. Like, it, you know, ultimately, like we need to kind of, you know, come together as humans and really save ourselves, sometimes from ourselves, sometimes from the tech, you know, like it's kind of, but that's why we try to highlight folks like yourself who are building tech, as I said, that's making us better people and actually has a chance to, you know, help us save ourselves. So that's, really well said the way you mentioned yours. Speaking of humans, who's a literal human who's been integral to your career journey that you want to shout out?
This is easy. It's got to be my co-founder, Taz. She is my partner in crime, my partner in life. We think so differently, but have such aligned values. And it's been a really tremendously like expanding relationship to work side by side with her and mind meld. I feel like I can channel her in my brain now. And building a company is really hard. We pick each other up. You know, we don't let each other quit on your worst day. And that's so meaningful. It's actually a very profound relationship.
That's amazing. How did you two meet?
We worked together at Open Door. Okay. Yeah. Right. So we knew each other from a couple years back.
That's great. Awesome. And then what's an inspirational quote that's kind of stuck with you and your entrepreneurial journey in tech?
Yeah, this is a quote from my sister. She would say, "I can do hard things." Or you can do hard things. And that was actually her like motherhood mantra. She has 3 kids under 5 right now, which is, you know, a ton of work and is really hard. And she, when I started working on Kindred, she was like, "I know that, you know, starting a company baby is a little different than, you know, raising human babies, but here's something that I told myself in those moments where I was sleep deprived, you know, at my wit's end, looking at something and saying, this is really hard." And I think you have this instinct to say, this is hard, like I need to stop, or this is hard, like there's a problem that I need to fix about the fact that it is hard. And instead reframing that to being like, this is hard full stop. And I'm going to keep doing it anyways. You know, like, this is hard, but luckily I can do hard things. Right. And that actually really was very helpful for me, especially in the early days when we were grinding, you know, 24/7, like, this is hard, but I actually think I'm capable of doing hard things. So let's just keep going. And yeah, that's a quote that has really kind of stuck with me and lifted me up at various points. I think it applies to a lot of different things in company building and beyond.
Life. Yeah. I think it's the first time someone's quoted their sister on the pod. So that's awesome. And it's been inspiring because I think we were kindred members in the early days and we could kind of feel, as you said, that kind of gnarly challenge of, like, you know, trying to reach certain scale. And then it grew and grew and grew. And we're like, oh, there's all these houses and all these places. And, you know, it's funny you mentioned Mexico City and London because my partner's from Mexico City and I'm from the States and we live in London. And so we're always trying to live this sort of life between the two places. And Kindred helps us do that. So I'm very grateful for what you've built. And yeah, just thank you for your time today. Thank you for coming onto the pod.
Thank you so much. Yeah. It's been a pleasure chatting.
Where can folks find out more about Kindred on the interwebs?
Yeah. So you can check us out at livekindred.com, LiveKindred. You can also follow us on Instagram, as I mentioned earlier in the podcast. That's also at LiveKindred. And that's generally our handle across other social platforms as well.
Amazing. Thank you. And I want to say I love this episode because I think, you know, Kindred perfectly exemplifies how, you know, technology can bring people together and foster connection rather than, you know, push people apart. And we're seeing that a lot these days, you know, as you said, technology is sort of pushing people apart and making people feel isolated. And I think your product does the opposite of that and brings people together. And so I'm really, really grateful for that. And that whole piece around creating trust between strangers is something we desperately need in today's world. And you've done it. So thank you for what you've built.
Thank you. We're working on it.
And to our listeners, please give them a shout. Check out the work that Justine's done. We'll include some links in the episode description. And please give us a review, give us a rating so we can keep bringing on more great guests like Justine Pilewski, the co-founder and CEO of Kindred, and book a stay. Thanks, everybody. Thanks, Justine.